Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, June 10th, 2014, and we're here with Dr. Michael Rice to help teach and promote and support people learning the tools of the ancient Aramaic process of forgiveness and a host of other tools that Dr. Rice and Jeannie have made available on the website. And we encourage you to call in. The number is 646-200-4169. Press 1 and that will let us know that you have a question. It will put you in the queue. And we hope you do so, because that always makes the shows more bright and vibrant and relevant to what you need to learn to move forward in your process. And everybody who has a question is holding that question for everybody else. So, that said, let's welcome Michael. As long as he doesn't have his mute button on.
I'm here. I am delighted to be here. And, of course, we're honored for everyone that joined us to have you with us and sharing this time. These discussions are so fruitful in so many lives. We just finished a series of workshops in Asheville, North Carolina, and ready to head to St. Louis next week. So it'll be Tuesday and Wednesday night in St. Louis. We're looking at adding one more workshop for parents. In the mix with Suzanne, who's been on our show on Monday. So we haven't had that one fall in place yet, but Tuesday and Wednesday evening next week, you'll be able to join us if you're in the St. Louis area. We'd be delighted to have you. And other than that, our project, as per usual, is that of learning, understanding, integrating, and supporting the true understanding of forgiveness on planet Earth, the first century Aramaic forgiveness process being the opposite of what this culture teaches. Culture teaches that what we need to do is stay dissociated from what it is that we don't want to deal with. Just keep it hidden and everything will be fine. And if you can't keep it hidden on your own, well, we've got some pills that will help you to keep it hidden. And then your life will be just A-okay. Of course, it impresses me. I don't, when we're back at Heartland, get to see a lot of television, and most places we go, we don't see much of it, but we're here with our son and daughter-in-law, and so we've been watching some of it, and it's kind of become a joke to see how many diseases are going to be caused by the latest solution. You know, you have a hangnail, and may end up with a heart attack, but your hangnail will be doing just fine. And, you know, I mean, the kids are becoming so aware of that as well, and they just sit and everybody just kind of grins at the minor things that they offer these pills for, and then the horrendous things that are created. And most people say, well, yeah, but they're rare side effects. And my offering is, first of all, they're not side effects. They are diseases, and everybody that takes that pill experiences them. Some perhaps on such a minor level that there's no expression of it, there are no symptoms, there's nothing to be seen, but the deleterious effect of the energy within the structure is definitely there in every person who takes the pill. We're going to have an interesting morning, Friday morning. We're going to be at the office of Dr. Shrinker here in Bristol, Tennessee. Again, a free open workshop. Why is this happening to me again? From 8 until noon. And it was really quite awesome to spend time with this gentleman and his wife, who in conversation, it's like we could start and finish each other's sentences. And it's really, truly in the healing. And it is one of the expressions he had was, this is such a terrible time to be practicing medicine. Of course, because of the manipulations coming out of the game. But then on the other hand, he said it's such a wonderful time because there's such an awakening going on. People are starting to realize what's happening. So it's pretty exciting. And we invite you, if there's something that you've been trying to hide from yourself, something you haven't wanted to deal with, something you think, if I were to feel that, I remember when I was 5 that happened and I never want to feel that again. Well, there are ways to dull the brain so much that it doesn't produce that feeling, or at least doesn't produce it in awareness, but the costs are enormous. We invite you to become brave enough to step into the practice. You know, in step 4 in the worksheet, there's a practice there, and that is the practice of presencing active love in your mind. And as you presence active love, things start to shift and change. And so with that practice, and then the actual forgiveness process, which opens what has been hidden, perhaps not just in your life, but in your generations, will start to open. And the beauty of it is that when it starts to open, that which you've been hiding from yourself, that which perhaps has been hidden from your bloodline for 1,000 generations, starts to loosen, starts to be untied, and you become free of it. And that's what we're here to support, is liberty from the hostilities and fears of the world. I was talking to someone this morning, and they were working with a person who was going through some pretty intense situations and emotions as, you know, tying in with those situations. And just comprehending the amount of unnecessary suffering that there is in the world. There's so many people, as most of you know, if you've been putting the pen to the paper, there's been a great deal of suffering disappear from your life. And it's all optional once you realize that suffering is produced by an energy within, not by a situation without. Everyone goes through situations without, which we could easily say, gee, I'd rather that didn't happen, and I don't have to suffer as a result of that happening. If I'm suffering, then there's something inside of me that can be changed. And when I change it, I also change the dynamics around me in the world that produce that situation. So it's a pretty empowering process, and that's what we're here to support. And we're delighted that everybody's here to join us. So, Dr. Kim, how do you be today, sir? Anything to share? Anything exciting happening in the practice world?
Well, I'm doing quite well, thank you. And I have had a whole series of sessions with people where the very thing you're talking about, needing to be able to, being willing to go back and look at the energies I carry, the memories, the upsets that I carry within me, that whenever they get activated, I get to feel the upset from. And if I refuse to go back and look at and actively dismantle them, they stay with me. And the irony of it is, as I run from this thing I'm carrying with me, I keep saying, I really don't like this, I really don't want to feel this, and the farther I run, the more tired I get, and the more tired I get, the more likely I am to put myself in situations where this situation, the energies I carry in me are going to get triggered. And if they get triggered, I don't have any option about whether or not I feel it. It's going to be there. And so the big hurdle for most of us is to be able to slow down and turn and look at and find a way, a system that actually works to help me not just sit and have this get triggered again and again, but to have it get triggered in the context of knowledge and this whole knowledge that allows me to actually change what got triggered. And there's a wonderful body of work that I got introduced to years ago that used to be called something else. Now it's being called coherence therapy. And it was a husband and wife team that decided to take a look at what is the process that happens when deep lasting change occurs in a therapy session. And they started analyzing those aha moments that actually had more than just a little light bulb go off. They actually had a fundamental shift in the energy level, the feeling sense, and then the future behavior of the patient. And as they analyzed that, they came up with what they called this depth-oriented brief therapy. And in 2004, some neuroscience came about that did research that actually validated what they had found in the clinical realm, that it's literally possible to rewrite the neural passages and the held memories and the energies. And prior to that time, all therapy had been about teaching something positive to lay over the old traumas, not really dismantling the old energies. And that work has continued, and now it's being called memory reconsolidation. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. I believe it's what happens in the worksheet process. I believe it's what happens in a couple of the other therapy techniques I do with people. If I can activate the old energy pathways, that whatever previous event in my life happened, I downloaded these negative energies and negative judgments against myself. If I'm willing to go back and access them, once they're activated, it opens a window of time during which that memory, that energy, can be rewritten so that it's no longer traumatic. It's no longer there to get triggered again and again. And the mechanism for wiping out the old and replacing the new is to hold at the same time this old traumatic memory and a new or newer, completely contradictory knowing of the person. So this is what I believe you're talking about in the worksheet process, where we're presencing the energy of love, reminding ourselves consciously of our true nature as we let something unlike love from our energy system come to the surface, holding those two together at the same time, and the magic happens. We don't have to know how it happens. Love shifts that. The positive energies in our lives that we know are true melt away the other energies within us that we're willing to let come to the surface. You talk about it as bringing it to the altar, A-L-T-E-R, that part of the conscious mind where it can be changed. And several times in the past 2 days in therapy, that very thing has happened. And people have gotten to the point where they are willing to go back and look through the pain, through the fear, through the sadness, through the tears, at what was happening when they were 9 years old, or 5 years old, or 17 years old, and sit with it, feel it, cry the tears if they're there, keep the breath moving, realize that they're alive today and their true nature is love, and they open their eyes, they take a few breaths, and they feel completely transformed. I had somebody yesterday morning say, I just dumped, and he used 2 swear words as descriptors about the load of hate he just dumped. And he said, I feel so much lighter, I feel giddy simply from going through this process. And you and I have had a lot of discussions about this. It isn't easy. It's simple. There's a step-by-step process you can do. but it isn't easy, predominantly because we've been conditioned to believe it's difficult, and predominantly because we have to face the negative energies that we've been running from. But that's what's going on for me.
Powerful. Very powerful. In terms of the holding a new contradictory story, I think that the ultimate movement of that is simply that active presence of love. I know that there's been some research done, you know, clinical research on prayer, where someone is sending, you know, a prayer for the healing of this disease or that disease or the next disease towards someone. And what they found was that the most powerful thing that one could do was simply send that act of love toward the person who's in suffering, and that the intelligence inside of that individual would use it most effectively, whereas a directed heal the hangnail didn't have the same impact, according to the research that was done. And just to me, really tapping into and recognizing who we are as the presence of love, and the messages the world has given us that take us in the opposite direction. It's the amount of pain and suffering that's been caused by those messages is monumental. And when we learn once again to get back to that active presence of love, the whole game changes in just the most amazing way, doesn't it? It's just absolutely unreal. When you were speaking, a thought that came to me is that in the Greek world, they had no forgiveness. And basically, the foundation of this culture, this Western culture, is Greek. That's kind of the pervasive energy and understanding of the way the world works. And there was no forgiveness in the Greek culture. The Aramaic culture had forgiveness, and the forgiveness was about exactly what we're speaking of, how I go inside myself and remove what never belonged. Forgiveness is removal. The Greeks shifted it around and turned it into letting somebody else off the hook because it was something inside of me that needed to be removed. And as a result, they recognized that there was an unconscious or dissociated state of mind involved, and they called it Pandora's box. And it was this big warning about don't ever open Pandora's box or you are really in deep trouble. And the truth is, the other thing they didn't tell us, or they didn't know to be able to tell us, was if you don't ever open Pandora's box, then your whole life becomes like Pandora's box. You have to open it. And when you open it in the active presence of love, everything shifts, everything changes. It's safe to look inside. And for all of us, there are some what the world would call terrible things there, whether they are situations or things that have come from our adult relationships, our childhood relationships, even things that happened in the womb. If those things are present and we're willing to look at them, we're willing to bring them forward, they simply begin to dissolve in the active presence of love. And then, of course, you start looking at what's impacted the generations, what's gone on in the world, the insanity and the degradation of human life that's happened is just unbelievable. And so to walk around carrying that burden, carrying that load, terrified to ever let it open and doing everything they can to make sure it stays closed. If it starts to open, hey, just give me a fifth of scotch. Let me eat food with no nutrition. It's really interesting to go into a restaurant and say, could I please have my food with nutrition in it? You know, for instance, if you go in to have a sandwich, 99.8 at least percent of the restaurants to serve totally, completely nutrition-free, toxic bread with their sandwiches. When you think about it, it's really bizarre to say, tea, could you serve me a sandwich that has nutrition in the bread? Because, you know, the millers learned how to remove the nutrition, which is the component in, say, for instance, wheat, that boils and goes bad and causes the bread to go bad. So they removed all of that and left nothing but the empty calories behind. And so, you know, I don't care whether you're going to, you know, this fast food restaurant or that one, or even many of the upscale restaurants. What do you get when they serve? Would you like bread with your meal? Yes, please. Okay. Do you have any with nutrition in it? What do you mean? Something other than white flour? Oh, I'm sorry, sir. We just don't have any of that. It's like, why am I eating here if I can't get nutrition in my food? It's just bizarre. But that's part of the way that we keep those things suppressed. We keep ourselves weakened. And there's so many habits of our culture that lock us into weakness so that we can keep those things hidden from ourselves. And it's time to reverse the trend. And it's time for us to begin as a species to not just request but demand that we have food with nutrition in it, and to make the choice to stop drugging ourselves, to make the choice to really truly take in what supports us. And when you do nothing but take in what supports you, Pandora's box is going to open for you much more readily, much more easily, and the energies locked into Pandora's box are going to move much more quickly. So that's our invitation, is to start to look at every aspect of your life and pick up, the, you know, if you don't know anything about nutrition, you know, the internet is a gold mine. Start researching. You'll find all kinds of conflicting things. Oh, yes, absolutely. But here's a simple dietary recommendation that you just can't miss with. It may not be perfect according to this theory of diet or that theory of diet or the next theory of diet, but if you eat a wide variety of whole foods, combined, properly chewed, properly digested, and properly eliminated, you'll have a big leg up on a culture that serves food that is virtually nutrition-free. It is an oxymoron to talk about packaged food. There's something that perhaps used to be food that they put in the package, but it's not food anymore. It's something other than that. But in our culture, we've been brainwashed into thinking that's food. So I just invite everybody to start to look at and think about those things, and then start to speak up in your communities, because until you speak up in your communities and ask your grocer, you know, I've spoken to grocers, and they've said, well, yeah, I don't know anything about that nutrition stuff. I just sell food. It's like, well, why are you in the business of selling food if you don't know anything about what it's for? You know, if a lawyer tried to practice law and said, well, I don't know anything about that law stuff. I just send out these forms. If a doctor said, well, I don't know any healing stuff. I just give these pills. Where would those people be? And yet the purveyors of food sell us so much. And, of course, it's because we've demanded it, because we've wanted it. And when you start becoming willing to open up and look at what's in there and nourish yourself, if you're nutritionally bankrupt, it's really hard for the energy system to conduct the energies that need to be removed for healing to occur. And so we just invite you to look at all of those factors in your life, and we're here to support the space of opening and moving through those things. You look at the average person, when their stuff starts to pop, they just run for some sort of a suppressor, some sort of a drug. Start letting that go. Start giving it up and instead reach for a carrot stick. Instead reach for a sprout salad. Watch what happens. It's amazing.
Well, we have a caller, too, actually.
Awesome.
So area code 509, you're on the air.
Oh, this is Jill Briggs. Michael.
Hey, Jill, welcome.
Hi, I want to thank you so much for coming to the Tri-Cities, Richland, Washington, 2 months ago. It has been a total life change for my husband and I. I just found out about your seminar when you were in town on Monday. My husband had moved out that Friday. He was served papers for legal separation. On the Monday, I started your classes. and he was not happy about it and told me he wanted to reconcile. So and that was on the Tuesday, and I said, if you really want to do that, please meet me at the Divine Fellowship for this seminar. And he came. He loved it. He was there for the next 3 days. He, to this day, is watching your videos, your DVDs, and doing the paperwork, and so am I. We are celebrating next week our 25th wedding anniversary. We're going to Mexico to celebrate. He's apologized to both of our boys for the way he has treated me over the years. And it's just been a life changer for us.
And well, I am going so delighted to hear that and so glad to be on the team. That's just awesome. Yeah. That's what we live for. That's what we work for.
Yep. We were at the end, and I have a whole lot of work to do on myself just to get myself back up where I was and more, and it's just been a wonderful, wonderful thing for us. And he even thanked me for kicking him out because it was an awakening for him, and he's learned a lot about himself and about our marriage. And so that was a big step for me to hear him even say that, because I figured when he was
That's
moved out,
awesome.
It was over. So, yep.
That's pretty awesome. You're blessed to have a man in your life that's ready and willing to step in and do his work, because men have been really disadvantaged in this culture with the brainwash of you're supposed to be macho, you're supposed to be tough, you're not supposed to feel, et cetera, et cetera. Men are really at a big disadvantage. And so if you've got someone who's ready to make that move with you, that's just fabulous. Congratulations.
Since he's been out of the house, he's written me 4 wonderful letters. And the first one was, you know, don't tell anybody about this letter. I'm opening up my heart and my emotions to you. And it's like, I kept telling him, this is not a weakness. This is not a weakness at all. It's a big man who can do this and to open up his heart. And so the last 3 letters have been just totally open and wonderful. So
well,
I'm very happy now.
Is there anything we can do to support you at this moment?
Pardon?
I say congratulations, and is there anything that we can do to support you at this moment?
Oh, just continue what you're doing, listening to you on the radio and watching your programs, and just keep it up. And, it's been wonderful.
Well, that is definitely the plan, and we're going for every mind, heart, and being on the planet.
Thank you. And actually, my husband said just the other day, he says, you know, I could do this program. I could help people with this program. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, this has really changed him. It's really opened up his eyes. And so that was a wonderful thing for him to even say that.
Well, that's pretty awesome. And if there's any way we can support you guys in starting another support group out there, that would be fabulous.
Well, thank
We've
you
had,
so much.
You know, some of the places where the work has been most successful, there's been 4, 5, 6 support groups going around a city in a week. So,
wow.
So I know that Sandra and William are doing the program out there, but there's room,
plenty
of room. We are
going
every
Wednesday night with them. We go every Wednesday night with them. We have dinner first,
fabulous.
And then we go out to their class and absolutely enjoy it. They're great people, and we've just really have dug right into it. It's made the biggest change. Without you, we'd probably be on the road to divorce right now. So I want to thank you so much, you and your wonderful wife, and for coming this far.
Well, thank you for saying thank you, and we're glad to be on the team.
Okay. Thank you very much, Michael.
All right. Blessings. Thank you for your call. Lots of love.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Well, that's delightful to hear.
Yeah, it doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah. So are you ready for the next caller?
Actually, as I say, it doesn't get much better than that. Probably the one place where over the years it's gotten better, and we've probably heard this about 8 or 10 times now, is someone who said, yesterday I was seriously contemplating and preparing to commit suicide.
from people who come out the other side with the same kind of enthusiasm and eyes open to, oh, this is a delightful game. This isn't a trauma. And, you know, to hear Jill say, you know, my husband actually thanked me for kicking him out because it was a wake-up call. And that's a big shift for people to be able to look at what yesterday was trauma and today be able to say, yeah, and I took this in hand and it really helped me to shift. And yesterday I thought they were doing something terrible to me, and now whole different reality. And that's the change of mind that we're looking to support people in getting. So fabulous, and I'm sure you get to see that all the time, Dr. Tim. It's pretty awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is a delight. It makes all of the time commitment well worth it. So our next caller is area code 970. You're in the air.
Hello, Michael and Dr. Tim, and I don't know if Jeannie's on because I wasn't on from the beginning, but whoever's there, hello. It's Carrie in currently Florida, sometimes Colorado,
welcome.
Sometimes Michigan. Thank you.
And sometimes Peru.
See, I could just jump up and down and cheer and say yay to everything you guys have been talking about today, though. So really, really wonderful. Teddy and I are here in Florida together, and we spent some time with a couple of beloved brothers this morning who are, we were on Skype with them, but they're in the middle of processing a bunch of old energy from Vietnam. And I kind of tuned into what you were saying about, or maybe Dr. Tim was saying it, about holding the field of love and holding these other things at the same time, and everything dissolves in that presence of love. And we were experiencing that this morning with all of us holding prayer and holding space for this clearing. Really cool.
Well, one of the things that we're holding the space for, and I've been kind of working on and developing, and to a great degree it's because of what Brad's been doing with Combat Vets out in Colorado.
Mm. Nice.
Creating an official program of combat vets as healers.
That's awesome. We
support combat vets coming into doing their work, learning how to hold that space, learning how to forgive. And so often the trauma that the combat vet carries, you know, right now in this country today, 200 combat vets from the Middle East will kill themselves today.
Mm.
And then tomorrow, another 200 are going to kill themselves. Mm. And yesterday,
a very dear friend of mine's son killed himself a couple of months ago from Afghanistan, coming back from Afghanistan.
So instead of carrying that energy around, what we're holding the space to do is to create a really, a vibrant program that supports that energy being shifted for vets, and vets can start to, especially the combat vets with so much trauma energy, can become support for healing that energy, not just in their brothers and sisters in combat or who've been through that insanity of combat, but for their family members, for the children. Now, it's occurred to me, there's someone who left a post on Facebook last week about no one left behind, and the question that comes up for me when we say no one left behind is, well, what about your spouse? What about your children? What about your parents? What are we doing in this world of war? I mean, when do we figure out how many hundreds of thousands of people have to die, or pardon me, let's say it the way it is, be murdered? You know, if a person kills someone, it's called murder. If someone kills hundreds of thousands under the auspices of someone else, saying it's okay, it's called war. Excuse me. When do we start to, you know, that old song from, I think it was back in the 60s, when will they ever learn? Thank you for working with those groups.
I just finished up re-editing a chapter in 21st Century Superhuman that has a whole bunch of stats on war by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. Really great statistics that make you just realize the utter insanity of war and how it does not belong in human civilization. So I'm grateful for this work. I called with a specific question. I know Ruka Dakusha is a feminine principle, right? And my question is, are Rachma and Kuba feminine principles also? And is there, I know I have a lot of definitions of those and information on them from your website and the things you've printed, and just wondered if you have any additional insights on exactly what, I know Rachma and Kuba are filters for the perceptions and intentions of love, and they're connected with the breath and smiling. And I guess I was just wondering about, I know you call Ruka Dakusha a feminine, is that an elemental principle? And then are they, I was thinking Rachma and Kuba are elemental principles, and are they feminine also?
Well, I think that that would be an awesome question for Aramaic Fridays with Dale.
I need to know today, though. I'm trying to get this done and out of here. So, and I could, I will try and call in on Friday. Let me see what's happening here. But I just thought if you have any insight in this moment, I would take it and say thank you.
Right. Well, let me say a piece of the puzzle that I'm coming to understand from Dale that I had not understood before.
Great.
And that is that the difference between the feminine and the masculine in Aramaic, and it's not about a male or female, man or woman, but those things which are referred to in language as feminine are those things which are unmanifest or not physical.
Oh.
So something that is not of the physical world, and then something that is of the expressed or so-called physical world would be masculine. And so my take, and I've never looked specifically into Rachma and Kuba to see how those words are gendered in Aramaic, but I suspect from what I'm understanding of that principle that they would both be gendered feminine. But I don't know. That's why I say let's ask the question on Friday.
Well, Michael,
go for it.
After listening to quite a few of Dale's CDs recently, he repeatedly hits the idea that if it ends in the ah or a sound, that means it's this experiential state, it's gendered feminine. And so Rachma and Kuba both have that ah, a sound at the end. And one of the things he did when he was here, he talked about this, both of these as, because it's gendered feminine, it means more of an internal experience than an external or a solid reality. So he held his arm up in front of his mouth, and he blew on his arm, and he said, this, the feeling of the air on my arm is masculine, because he can actually physically feel it. But the perception of the movement of the air, my internal experience of that perception, is feminine. The words on the book, on the page, are masculine. My perception of them is feminine. So Rachma and Kuba, as those words are written, would indicate to me from listening to Dale that it's a felt state that I experience when that filter is set to Rachma or Kuba. It is my internal perception of the ability to intend only loving intentions and to experience only loving perceptions.
Very interesting. You know, what's interesting is, go ahead. Sorry, Michael, we kind of got a delay here.
Yeah, there is a bit of a delay. And I was going to say, and it might be worth deepening the experience or the conversation on Friday, but yeah, that's my understanding as well, Tim. And it's kind of a new arena for me with the Aramaic. My study has been in the forgiveness area more, so that's why I would defer to Dale. And that's a good explanation. Thank you.
I'll definitely make a point and see if I can call in Friday and discuss it with him a little. And one of the really interesting things that is coming forth in some of the other studies I'm doing, like with the Peruvian shamans and what was carried forward in the Andes before it was kind of chased into the hills by the conquistadors who were trying to imprint with, you know, their whole the sort of oppressive kind of Christianity. I've got somebody outside the window here. Let me move into another room here. But what is really interesting, that such an intrinsic part of this ancient culture is the feminine principle, and how these ancient cultures who see us moving into a new age see part of it as the restoration of the feminine. And the feminine is, the feminine and masculine principles are described kind of the way you're describing them right now. And I have a feeling these really, really ancient, deep cultures that understood the source field that we're part of, that creation comes from, and the feminine principle that blends with that to call, you know, to bless our existence in the way we call it into being, is really profound. And I have a feeling there's some correlations here, but I'm still kind of figuring it all out.
Well, another thing that Dale talks about is the word for heaven, or the word for kingdom of heaven, which what was translated by the Greeks as kingdom of heaven was Malkuta Deshmaya. And both Malkuta and Shemaya end in the A sound, which means they're gendered feminine. So there's no way to justify interpreting it as kingdom or masculine.
Mm.
And in essence, the kingdom of heaven, you know, Dale could do a beautiful riff on this, but the essence of it is that it's a felt sense that's everywhere and nowhere. It's not located in a space. Because it is gendered feminine, it means it's an experience. It's not a physical location.
Nice.
And the other thing is that if you, he was talking about it in terms of the yin and yang, the energies, and the symbol that's drawn. The idea here is that masculine and feminine, or yin and yang, are these two aspects of the same energy. It's not separate.
Right.
We're living in a world of physical perception where when I look out the window, I see the tree as being separate from me. But that's simply because my physical mechanisms for perception can't see the energies that connect us all and flow through us. So we try to explain the physical, or we try to explain everything we see or talk about in terms of the words that describe the physical. And Dale, you know, he admits he struggles even with his years of studying it and trying to explain it. How do you explain to a mind that wants to see negative and positive, male and female, me and other, how do you explain that it's all one energy and there are only different aspects of that same energy?
Mm.
So if you try and think of it that way, when you're thinking about masculine and feminine, it's not, there's no separation there, it's just a different aspect or quality of that same energy.
Nice.
And two thoughts that I would add to the conversation at this point. One would be that as the feminine has the felt sense, what's been translated as the kingdom of heaven is more properly translated as the community of love. the felt sense of a community, you know, which is exactly right. What we're looking for through this radio show, is a community based in love. And then the other thing that I would put into the conversation is that it is an oxymoron to think that there's such a thing as oppressive Christianity. If it's oppressive, it's not Christianity. If it's Christian, it's not oppressive. There's just no such thing. People came in under guise of Christianity with all kinds of idiotic, vicious, attacking insanity and called it Christianity. But that didn't make it Christianity. So those two words are an oxymoron. And what we have is insanity masquerading as, you know, and it works. It's the same. You look at how many things they call laws that are just so insane, but because some man put his signature on it, it's not a law. That's why the ancient scripture said you don't follow that which is out of harmony with the true law. You stay in harmony, whatever anybody else says you have to do. And so that would be my input in that regard.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you both so much, and I shall continue here, and we'll do my best to call in one more.
All right. Well, we appreciate you. And
you too.
I'm
very close. I'm leaving here Sunday, hoping to be done before that. So we shall catch up soon. Much love and many blessings to everybody in this beautiful community.
Thanks, Carrie.
Thank you. Blessings.
Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, that just to reiterate something Dale has said on the show before, there's a lot of, because we're in the cultures we're in, there's a lot of pressure to try to locate where is heaven. And he says almost every time where Yeshua was using a word that was referenced as above or in the sky, in his teachings, he was talking about a higher level of consciousness. He was not talking about a physical location. And because he was talking to people who didn't really have the brain cells for it, he used a word that they could understand, something open and limitless and spacious that's got no one point to define it. And so he talked about the sky as the open, limitless space. And he was trying to get them to understand this concept of the perception rather than the physical, the internal perception. That's, you know, these elemental forces. And he talks about the wind. So an elemental force is something that we can perceive the effects of, but we can't see it directly. You don't get to see the wind. You don't get to see where it starts and where it ends. But you can see the movement in the branches of the trees. Or you can feel it against your skin because it's moving air as it moves. But what is the wind? It's nothing we can perceive with the physical senses. So the wind would be an elemental force, like the breath and the heartbeat. You know, these are things that the one word from the ancient Aramaic that would be for breath and wind and heartbeat is all ruka. That's that one word, an elemental force. So as you've talked about so often, Michael, it's really a whole different level of understanding, especially for the Western mind, that it takes many repetitions of exposure to this material and then experiencing life and coming back to the material again to try to get a sense of what's really being communicated. And, you know, maybe you'd say a little bit about the idea that you have to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear.
When you recognize that Yeshua is saying that you had to have the content in your mind before your mind could perceive it, it's a pretty pretty awesome level of understanding. And the experiential aspect of being able to tap into, and there was that particular elemental force that was designed for humans. You know, we've got earth, air, fire, and water. They're all the elementals. And Yeshua introduces this concept of a particular elemental force meant for humans. You know, he's talking to one of the elders of the temple, and the elder doesn't have a clue what he's talking about. He says, what, you are an elder of the temple, and you don't know what I'm talking about? And that's when he uses the example of one of the elementals that at least everybody had a direct experience of, and that was the wind. But you don't know where it came from. You don't know where, nobody knows what it is, but we can sure experience by the fact that it's been here, or by its effects, the fact that it's been here. And in precisely the same way, when we start to become acquainted with this elemental force called Ruka Dukudsha, meant for humans, it is that force in Aramaic would be defined as that which is proper for humans, and that she undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. And when you start watching, when you start inviting that power to go to work in you, and then you watch how things shift in your mind, you watch how the insanity disappears, and you know she's been here. And that's a pretty awesome thing to have, is that kind of understanding. So do we have anything happening in the chat room, Dr. Tim, or anybody in the phone queue with their hand up?
Well, I was just typing in the chat room to somebody. It was empty for a long time today, but someone was just asking about whether or not anybody has researched the equivalent terms in Eastern and Western esoteric traditions, and I told them that that's what the work that Dale Allen Hoffman is doing, and that also Guy Finley has a lot of that woven into his talks. And then he was just asking specifically, where do you find that on Dale's site? And I was saying it's really all over Dale's site. Dale has been studying Hebrew and Aramaic and Greek and looking at how they've been translated into English over the years. And so that's what's happening there, and I'll switch back over to the studio. And, yes, we do have someone else with their hand up.
And before we call him in, if you go to Dale's site, which is daleallenhoffman.com, he has a package of DVDs and CDs that has just a ton of information. I forget exactly what the price of the package is, but it's so reasonable.
And I think it's 100.
Dale in the distance,
I think it's on sale for the next few days at $99, and if you want to get the digital, I think it's $55.
Thank you. Awesome. So if you want to support Dale and the work that he's doing, Dale's a young man with 3 children, and a lot on his plate, and I really admire him and acknowledge him for how he's moving in the world and taking it and making it available, and having been in that posture, and of course to some degree still being in that posture, I know what every bit of support means that shows up to assist in bringing it forward, because it is a huge, huge project to do, to bring in all of the factors that empower us to bring this forward is just monumental. And, you know, a little support from our friends has always helped us. So go to Dale's site, hours and hours listening, and be wowed at so many turns as you listen. It's pretty powerful. And in that practice, in that process, you'll get the experience of what we were talking about, of that active space of love that dissolves the insanity. It'll carry your process to a new level in that regard. So check it out. And you've got a caller, Dr. Tim?
Yep, we have area code 561. You're in the air.
Hi, Dr. Tim. Hi, Dr. Rice. This is Rashida. How are you guys doing?
Hello, Rashida.
I am doing well, Rashida. Nice to hear your voice.
Great. Great, thank you. I just wanted, the lady Carrie was asking about the word Rahma and Kuba, and I remember I was on the call on March 7th, this year, and, every time he talks, like Fridays, I try to make connection with Arabic language, and, for the the rahma, you know, we say the ch sound, it's not a ch, rahma. Rahma is actually a feminine, you know, like Tim was saying, and it's the womb, because the, like in Arabic, and it's also in Aramaic, rahim is the womb of the woman. So kuba, or we say in Arabic, habba, habba, with the ch becomes a ch in Arabic, habba is like the seed. So basically you have a connection between the seed that grows in the womb, and then you have that love and that gift and the flow and you know, its connection to the source. And it's all feminine, you know, kind of that's the, it's feminine. And Malakut.
I'm sorry?
Rashida, could you once again repeat the kuba aspect of it that you were saying?
Yeah, the kuba in Arabic means habba. The habba is the seed. It's the seed. But also the word hub, which is love. So you have the seed, the love, they are connected. And word, you know, the mercy, the rahma, it's actually a mercy love. It's more, you know, like even the translation in English is not correct. It's not mercy. It's more than mercy. It's kind of love, and it embodies all those beautiful qualities of gift and the source and the birthing and the force and, you know, that's kind of connection. And the word malakut, shmaya, in Arabic, malakut samai, which means the subtle realm. It's the subtle world. You know, we have, like you were saying, Tim, the physical world, which is manifested. But beyond that, the thing that we don't see, the energy, it's a subtle, a latif, or it's the malakut, the sama. And the word that connects with that is jannah. And I think Dale was talking about that. The jannah is in Arabic also means the garden, and it's the heaven, and it's also feminine. So it's like, and it's not like, you know, a lot of people think it's a place somewhere outside of us. It's actually a state of being. It's you could be in hellfire right now, and you could be in a state of jannah or part of the subtle world or subtle realm of Malakut Shmaya. That's like just my little contribution. Thank you, guys.
Awesome input. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else exciting in your world that you'd like to share with us today? We really appreciate having our team, by the way.
Oh, I love you guys. On Friday, we had our meeting at the Living Center in Boca, and it was great. We have new people, and we were listening to your, you know, the communication videotape, and we were having, you know, discussion, and we did a little bit of the worksheet, and it's going well. You know, more and more people are joining in, you know, and so it's awesome. Thank you.
Fabulous. So anybody that's in Boca Raton area, every other Friday night, you can check out on our website. There's a support group at CSL in Fort Lauderdale, just off of Palmetto Park in 95. And beyond that, we're down to just the last few minutes, so we're going to have to bring the show to a close. We appreciate each and every person who chooses to come and play with us and chooses to do the work. We just hold in the deepest space for each of you and invite you to give the world the best gift you can possibly give, and that is create the best year yet of your eternal life. Yes, it's so much.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.